You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to an episode of Active XP, the show where we review games. I'm one of your hosts, Joseph Yaden. Joining me today is the beautiful British boy, Chris Penwell. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Joseph. How are you today?
I'm blinded by the sun. I guess it's 6 p.m. right now, and I'm facing the sun, and I got the blinds open because I need sunlight. My body is just requesting the sunlight. And look at this. The listeners can't see, but look at this. This is just a nightmare. You see this?
Yeah, I do.
It's awful. So that's how I am. How are you?
Oh, good. I just give up and just do the blinds whenever sunset starts to come.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to talk about It Takes Two. I'm ready to fix your relationship. And
Thank God. I'm glad you're here to fix my relationship. So, yeah, we're going to talk about It Takes Two. This is a co-op game. God, this light. I'm going to have to fix this light. This is really distracting. And don't you dare cut this out, by the way.
I was thinking about it.
No, leave it in here. Okay, there we go. Oh, yeah, that's a lot better. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway. We're going to... Sorry about that. We're a professional podcast.
Yes, we are.
We're going to talk about It Takes Two, the latest co-op game from Haze Light Studios. And this is a very interesting game that I didn't expect to like, just flat out. Yeah. I was not interested in this at all. You, I think, were a little bit more jazzed about it beforehand.
Yeah, because I saw the inventiveness and like the whole idea of Jose Fares making a platformer. A genre right. that you could put a lot of creativity in is something that really made me excited. And I'm glad that we were able to get a review copy from EA Originals to do this review. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. So again, this is made by Haze Light Studios. The head of the company is Joseph Fares, who you guys, I'm sure, are probably aware of. That he's the guy who had the explosive, I guess, temper tantrum. Not really temper tantrum.
No.
But he had his explosive rants. There we go. Thank you. About the Oscars at the Game Awards. I believe it was 2017. And he's sort of a character. And I think with this, like, A Way Out, which was their previous game, I don't know that it got a lot of attention. People who played it said they liked it, but this game, I think, is, like, putting this studio on the map, or yeah. at least more so, because of how well it's been received. So, yeah, we're just gonna talk a little bit about it. We're gonna spoil it as well. So, yeah. if you want our spoiler-free thoughts, listen to episode 114 of Active Quest, the main show. Go listen to that.
Do you want to give general thoughts though before we move on? Like,
yeah. Well, yeah. Just in case. Yeah. Just in case you're listening to this and you weren't aware that there were going to be spoilers. Yeah. We'll give general thoughts and all that. And then yeah, go check out the main episode if you want to hear our spoiler free discussion on that. Let me read the summary here and then we'll give general thoughts and then we'll get into spoilers. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay, cool. This is the summary of the game per the website, that has like a description of the game. It reads, quote, "Embark on the craziest journey of your life in It Takes Two, a genre-bending platform adventure created purely for co-op. Play as the clashing couple Cody and May, two humans turned into dolls by a magic spell. Trapped in a fantastical world, they're reluctantly challenged with saving their fractured relationship by the suave love guru Dr. Hakim. A huge variety of gleefully disruptive gameplay challenges stand between them and their return to normal," end quote. So I think it's a pretty apt
that's a really spot on description right there.
Yeah, because it's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah.
Just because it does so much. Okay, so let's give general thoughts, just a quick quick rundown, and then we'll get into spoilers. So, Chris, general thoughts without spoiling anything. What did you think of this game?
It Takes Two is a very inventive game. It keeps challenging your expectations, and like it really surprises you like every 15 minutes, it seems like.
Yeah.
This is the most creative platformer I've ever played. And you know, I've played a lot of them, like Rayman. I played the Super Mario series, well, most of them anyway. I haven't played Odyssey or 3D Mario World. But yeah, like I really enjoyed this experience, and like this marriage between gameplay and story that Hosafara seems to like be a master of, with like Brothers mm-hmm. of Tale of Two Sons and A Way Out. Like it's like it reaches it's his full potential with this game.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Yeah, there isn't really much like this. I mean, I guess you could compare it to A Way Out, but only in that it's like co-op only, I guess. Other than that, it's I think pretty different because it's a platformer.
And you get a lot for your money as well, because like it has a high budget blockbuster action in a platformer, right, which is strange, like you wouldn't expect it. And then just the graphics are absolutely stunning. I was mentioning so earlier, but I think like if you told me that Sony published this with one of their big first party studios, I would have believed you. You know, that's how good it is. And you have so much value because it's only $40 and a partner or a friend online can join you, or you could do it offline too.
Yeah. Or locally. Yeah. And so the other person gets it for free. Basically you invite it, the person who owns the game invites the second player via online or locally, obviously. And that second player can join for free without having to own a copy. And I think that's a really ballsy and risky move. But it just goes to show like how much they want you to play this game, and they're not necessarily only focusing on money, you know? And that's what you get when you have a smaller studio like this who's willing to take risks versus your annualized franchise that you see, you know, all the time.
I think it works because I remember A Way Out doing well for the studio. And now, like, it's like this natural, kind of organic word of mouth that game developers and indie studios in particular really want with their marketing campaigns, right? So it's a brilliant, genius move by Hazelight, and I hope they keep making co-op games with this feature.
Yeah, I'm with you. So we'll leave it right there for our spoiler-free thoughts, and then now, if you guys want to turn it off, if you haven't played yet, feel free to do that.
Come back.
Yeah, because we're going to get into spoilers now. So, I have a run of show here. This is just going to be sort of a general guide for us here. The first thing we have is the story. Now, this game is really story-focused, and the narrative, for me, was one of the driving forces to keep me playing, which says a lot because I'm not somebody who generally cares or pays attention to a story in a game, which I know is blasphemous to a lot of people, but I think it's not that I just automatically turn that off in my brain. It's that typically within the first half hour of a game, the story loses me of most games. Whereas with this, it's almost like The Last of Us or, you know, these games that have famous stories where the story is so intertwined throughout the game that like you can't turn that off, really. Like it's impossible to separate the two, and that's a testament to how well this game is designed. So basically the with the story, as I read before, the two parents turn into dolls and they become separated from their daughter, and they're in the midst of a divorce, or they're gonna get divorced, and essentially the parents want to find their way back to the daughter and become human again. That's sort of the main gist of the story. But one thing, and you put this here, is that the two main characters are pretty unlikable, which I think I'm in agreement. And I noted here as well that they're not like evil or like, you know, totally despicable or whatever, but they're just kind of like selfish kind of jerks, basically. And I would have liked to have liked them more, which is kind of a weird thing to say. But at the same time, I still wanted to see them reach their goal because I cared about the daughter, I feel like, a lot more. The daughter, Rose, yep. I believe her name was. And she's, what do you think, like 5 years old, maybe? Something like that? Five or six years old? Very young. And so this daughter's basically by herself. It's like so horrible. She's like by herself in this house while the parents are dolls and they're going on this crazy adventure. So I wasn't a fan of the main characters, which is kind of a shame. What did you think of them?
I think they work in a way as protagonists just because of the comedic chemistry between the two actors. And like the timing, the script is excellent. I just find their dialogue fantastic. So that you can kind of ignore their faults, I guess. But at the same time, you can believe that chemistry too between the two characters. You believe that they were in a relationship together. And what this game beautifully does is through its gameplay shows how they're building their relationship up again. We're seeing, for example, in the garden level, we see the male character, Cody, he's rekindling his passion for gardening, right? And then they realize together that, hey, May wasn't very supportive of him, his hobby. Right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of fractured their relationship. And at the end of the sequence, we see him get more involved in the garden and be reignited again, And, through the gameplay, through the level design, we see that, he used to be very much into it just because of how evocative it is.
Yeah. And I think one thing is that as the game progresses, you start to like the characters more.
Yeah.
Because they sort of, first of all, they're nicer to one another. And I think that's just generally more likable. And then they sort of become parents, or at least they show their parenthood. And I think a healthy way at the very, very end. And so at least with me, I liked them way more at the end than I did at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I see you making a face right now. What's the face?
No, I'm just thinking about that infamous scene with the elephant. I feel like at the end of the story, it didn't feel redeemed. That was horrible.
Yeah.
What they did to that elephant, they killed it pretty much.
Let's talk about the elephant. So this is, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you might have seen people talk about this on Twitter or something. Because before I played, I just saw somebody mention the elephant scene. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Okay, so basically, at the beginning of the game, the daughter, Rose, cries on these dolls, which is sort of what sparks the spell, I guess, and turns the parents into those dolls. And so Cody, the father, says, okay, well, to break the spell, we just have to get her to cry on us again. Sure, I guess that logic makes sense. Well, they were like, okay, well, how do we get her to cry? And so basically, what they end up doing, it's this horrible, pretty drawn-out sequence of them essentially murdering her stuffed elephant.
Dragging it and breaking pieces of it, the hair and all that. Yeah. It was pretty horrifying to see.
Right, yeah. I think there's a sequence where, a pin or a pen or something stabs into the elephant's ear, and then they pull it and rip it, and it rips its ear off. And then they rip its leg off, and the stuffing all comes out. And then they, push it off a cliff, in Lion King.
Yeah.
That whole thing. And it's way over the top and I don't know
what makes it so brutal. Horrifying to me, and I'll remember this for a very long time, is that the elephant has this adorable kid's voice that you'd see in a children's television show, and it's going no, please don't hurt me. I'm like, oh my god, I don't want to do this right now, and I had to look away from the screen while doing this. But it was effective as well, because
absolutely,
it was very effective.
Absolutely, it's,
and that music as well was super creepy because it was it was a toy,
box. Little bells,
little bells,
yeah, like little bells and stuff. Yeah,
but it sounded kind of twisted at the same time. So Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. But I do feel like the parents weren't redeemed for that situation because they didn't care about the daughter at all at that point. They just cared about themselves coming back. They didn't care, right. Like, oh, she's going to be upset. Like, they were intentionally trying to make her sad in a situation where, you know, her parents being divorced, making her feel even worse, right?
Right.
So they weren't even considering that. And I feel like at the end, they should have done like this little scene of them fixing the elephant, you know, rather than just showing the elephant fixed. You know, I feel like they should have done the process of showing that and like giving her back to the daughter.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair. And us saying we don't like the parents, I don't know that that's necessarily like a criticism or I don't know it because I feel like it's, you don't necessarily need to like the characters for it to still be effective. Like, I think this is a great allegory for a lot of parents.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of parents are probably, or, well, not probably, a lot of parents are bad, and they only act out of selfishness. So I think this is a great sort of mirror to that.
Yeah, and so I think you're right. I think we're rooting for the daughter Rose instead of the parents.
Exactly.
Because we keep seeing scenes of her like being sad and, you know, reminiscing about stuff about her parents and when they were happy, you know, before.
Exactly.
And like,
and one,
I remember you mentioning earlier, Joseph, was like, oh, it's gonna be one of those games. It's gonna be a sad game, right? And you were kinda right.
Yeah, I was. And then the one thing, this is something that was really prominent in my head the whole time we were playing. So there's this Dr. Hakim character who is very like over the top and like very exaggerated. he's a book and I think he's supposed to be Hispanic. And just way, way over the top. And I think at first he's kind of annoying, but as you play through the game, he's a little bit more endearing. And his entire purpose is to, as we've joked before, to fix their relationship. And he wants to challenge them to get them to work together. And throughout the whole game, in my mind, I was like, why does he want them to get back together? Like, why? Like, I just kept thinking, like, some relationships or some marriages you're not meant to be with that person. Like, you shouldn't force that to happen if it's not right. And that's something I've always felt, you know, outside of the context of this game. I just think that you shouldn't force relationships into working. But at the end of the game, I sort of realized that Dr. Hakim wasn't necessarily trying to get them to become a couple again romantically, but to be parents, to be co-parents. And I think
friends.
That message, or friends, whatever, just, but the point is to be there for the daughter. And that really stuck with me. And at the end, I was pretty satisfied with that. Like, okay, he wasn't necessarily pushing for them to become a couple again, but to be good co-parents, which I think is a really strong and important message. And so for that, I really want to give this game credit for sort of subverting my expectations and just doing something that games typically don't cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you weren't as pleased with the ending, right? You thought it was too neat, I don't know. What did you think?
I just thought it was too simple, honestly. After, we'll talk about this later, but like this game felt pretty long and I wanted more of a reward for it. You know, we saw a few cutscenes here and there at the end showing them being together, you know, helping Rose come back home. But I don't know. I think my mind's kind of changed after talking about it with you. Because I think, yeah, like, it doesn't show them, like, being madly in love to get together again. And I think that if they did that, that would have felt cheap.
Exactly. And that's, the whole time I was like, God, they're going to get back together at the end, which I just feel like is not believable. Like, I wouldn't believe that. And they didn't. At the end, they weren't really, like, romantic with one another. They did kiss, but it wasn't really, like, I don't know. It wasn't, it wasn't, like, sexual or romantic or anything. But I think the point is that they vowed to be co-parents and, like, be there for the daughter, which I think was... that's what I was satisfied with, and I was so glad they didn't take the easy way out and just go, okay, you're back together,
and I think the game shows that they weren't very compatible with each other. One is a hard worker and the other is like someone who loafs around, you know.
Right.
So I feel like, yeah. And like all for the fun. And both of those people, the Cody and May, they have a different, like their values of life and how to spend it are completely different. Like they've gone on completely different paths.
Yeah, I'm with you. So story is very important in this game, and I think it stands out. It's one of my favorite video game stories ever.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the gameplay, and we'll cover the puzzles and all that. This game has like some of the best variety I've seen in a game ever. Like,
yeah,
it's reminiscent of so many games. Like, obviously you've got your typical platforming sections, but even those I feel like were really inventive, especially when you combine the co-op nature of it, because almost every puzzle you come across, or I guess every puzzle you come across is it built around co-op. And so like, it's not just, okay, jump across the gap. It's, oh, you're the other player's controlling the platforms and you have to tell me when it's safe to jump.
Yeah.
And so there's this element of communication that goes through, which again is like, it almost reminds me of Celeste, in that the goal is to climb a mountain. And so the game is really hard because you're supposed to overcome that mountain. And this, the goal is to repair the relationship. And so they execute that by like making you communicate with one another. Yeah. It's really brilliant. And yeah, I just think like you mentioned here, the hammer and nail puzzles. Yeah. I think those are spot on. Like one of my favorite puzzles, basically, Cody has the nails and May has the hammer. And so Cody can throw the nails at any wall and they stick out. And so then May can jump on it and use the hammer to like swing across. And so there are sections when Cody needs to quickly throw the nails and then she jumps and like there's something chasing her or whatever the case might be, where it's like time oriented. And I just think those were so smart and so inventive and really satisfying, especially when you do it correctly.
Yeah, the aha moments, there's plenty in here. And you get that satisfaction from finishing a puzzle or figuring it out, you know?
Yeah, so that was one of my favorites. I also really like the one where Cody can change size.
Yeah.
And so and then May could like walk on walls basically. And so there were a lot of really cool puzzles with that. Especially like during the space section and all that, I just thought that was really, really cool.
And then what I love is that that puzzle element and like your grasp of the different abilities both Cody and May have, they evolve into the boss battle themselves. And like it's so evolved how like, okay, you've learned everything about the mechanics we've given you, now implement them, you know? And that is perfect boss design. And each and every time it felt like a big moment at the end of the level to finally beat the level and like finish this big boss battle.
Right, yeah, and it's rewarding, and it's sort of a culmination of all of the mechanics you've learned. And then the next level is completely different, and you don't use those mechanics anymore. Nope. Or maybe you do, maybe some return. I actually can't remember. But nonetheless, yeah, like the next section is like totally vastly different. And that's one thing that I think works to this game's strength. Like, I think my favorite moment of the entire game, gameplay-wise, was there's this section where Cody is flying a plane, and May is on top of the plane fighting a squirrel. And it's presented as like a fighting game, but I was Cody and I was actually controlling the plane. And so like I was bobbing and weaving around obstacles and you were on top of the plane fighting a squirrel. It was so wild and over the top.
Something else I want to mention is that, you know, you can play this like another time, you know, with multiple playthroughs. And with each character, they're so different that it's going to offer you another walkthrough with completely different gameplay.
Right, yeah, like, while we were playing, I was like, fuck, I want to play as May now, because that section looked really cool. Yeah. Like, there's one of the earlier sections, it's like a third-person shooter, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And Cody can, like, I don't know what, I guess it's like bee like juice?
Honey,
Honey, oh, wow, I'm a fucking idiot.
Bee juice,
honey, wow. God, I fucking hate myself. Okay, yeah, honey. So I would, I would throw the honey, and then you had, I don't know what was your thing, like explosive, like what, yeah. Like yours was like a gun, I don't know what it was, but anyway, when you combined
match,
the two, when
I
would,
think.
Oh, it was like fire or something, yeah. When I would put honey on the wall, and then May, you could shoot the honey, and it would create this gigantic explosion, and so we had to work together to take out enemies and stuff, so that was really cool. There's a section that plays like Diablo. It's just like a top-down like dungeon crawler, and like we have magic powers.
Absolutely nuts.
And crazy. There's an underwater section that actually doesn't suck.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty well done.
The controls are fantastic, like, throughout.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the best-feeling 3D platformers I've played.
Yeah. In a platformer especially, that's important. I mean, in any game, controls are important, but in a platformer, it's like, when you get your hands on that controller and you hit the jump button, you pretty much know immediately how that's going to feel, if you're going to like that, you know? And in this game, it's like, I think it still would have been okay, like, if the controls were a little floaty, because the rest of it is so good, but also the controls are, like, fucking, like, phenomenal, right? So it's, like, it's just awesome.
It's just a few puzzles we came across that felt a bit awkward, like the one with... where I controlled, like, a platform, like, 360. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the environment didn't really contribute to that. Like, it felt, like, pretty wonky because I had to go around these pipes that kind of got construed kind of, like, my movement.
Yeah, so, I honestly, like, I don't know how many puzzles are in the game, but, like...
There's a lot.
I would say, like, probably only, like, five of them I felt were a little obtuse, which, like, I don't know, if there's 50 puzzles in the game and only five of them are obtuse, that's pretty good. For the most part, I think everything was, like, well-designed. And, yeah, and it was cool because one of us would always, like, figure it out, right? Like, we didn't use a walkthrough, which I'm not trying to brag or whatever.
No, we didn't use it.
It's, like, well-designed enough to where you don't need to use a walkthrough. And what was cool is, like, I would be stumped, and then you would go, oh, yeah, just do this. And I'm like, okay, cool. Or, like, you would be like, I have no idea. And I'm like, oh, I think I figured it out. So,
that's
like,
what makes
both
the
of us
co-op so
figured
fun.
It out. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the gameplay is immaculate. It's inventive. It's got, I think, like, some of the most variety I've seen in a game ever. The levels are fantastic. Now, there are so many different level types. Like, it starts out and you're like in this shed, and then it goes to like, you know, like underwater, and then you're in space. I don't really understand the logistics behind that, but you're in space.
It's inventive. It's imaginative. Like, I just said, hey, it's just magic. Just go with it. And then
I was like, is this actually happening? And you're like, it's just magic. I'm like, okay.
And it's fucking gorgeous. Like, it's just so evocative. Like, for example, you're in this, like, quaint ski village, or whatever, where Cody and May met. And in the, like, Joseph, you noticed this, but in the skyline, you can see the outside world out of the snow globe you're in. So I'm like, holy shit. Like, it's so imaginative, so thoughtful. And, like, there are so many big-scale moments where you believe, like, hey, is this an indie game? Like, this is pretty up there in terms of budget.
Right, it looks and plays it. Oh, yeah, that was awesome. The clock tower section is fantastic. Yeah, it looks and feels expensive. Like, that's one of the takeaways. But yeah, what was interesting is, like, every level is based on, like, a real place that the two characters have in common, whether it's their house or whatever the case is. Like, one of my favorite sections is Rose's bedroom. And so when you imagine a bedroom in your head, it's kind of like Toy Story, where, like, the dolls are, like, really small and the room is huge. But there's this, like, level of, like, it's, like, surreal almost, where it's very exaggerated, and there are these, like, gigantic ball pits that would obviously not fit inside of her actual room, but like you said, it's magic, and so there are, like, these levels are just, like, ginormous and inventive, I think,
you know,
and
what
really kind, bizarre, almost.
Kind of reminds me of some classic films, like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, or, what is it, like, Bedknobs and Broomsticks? something like that, where like,
I haven't heard of that one, but
imaginative worlds and they learn like something from it, you know, from exploring that right. area.
Yeah, it almost felt like dreamlike, where yeah. you're grabbing bits and pieces of reality, but then melting them together in a dream so that it doesn't like really make sense, but from the context of like gameplay and like linearity, there is a path you can follow, which I think is really cool. And then one of my other favorite things are the little mini games scattered throughout.
Yeah.
And they're always competitive. And so for the most part, they're pretty like basic. Like some of them are button mashy, or some are like a music rhythm game sort of. And so it always pits us together, and you beat me at most of them. I think, yeah, no, it's okay. But I like that there, because it sort of is like taking a break from the game and like just having like a little bit of fun. I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things is that you could play a full game of chess. There's so there's this section where you're on a chessboard and you're like fighting with the chess pieces. And at first I was like, fuck, is this going to make us actually play chess? And it doesn't. And a part of me was like a little disappointed because I wanted to play. But then the other part of me was like, well, if younger players are experiencing this, they probably might not want to play chess, whatever. But then we stumbled upon an actual chessboard. And that was like one of the coolest things, because it's almost like wizard chess in Harry Potter, where like the characters were like pieces almost, and like they would move the chess pieces. It was just that was really cool. Mm-hmm. I thought that was awesome.
And I think we missed a few as well. I don't think we had everything. Leading to, once again, a bunch of replayability there, so you can find everything right. in the game.
Yeah.
They're pretty well hidden.
So, yeah, I think so. So, yeah, we've praised this game a lot. It's not perfect. I think there are some faults that this game has. And I think the biggest one that we both agreed on is that it's too long.
Yeah.
We finished in around 10 hours, 9.5, 10 hours. I feel like this game would have been stronger at about 8 hours. Now, discussing game length is kind of tricky as a critic, because like we get paid to do this, and you know, we get games for free. That's not a brag. It's just we get games for free versus a regular consumer who purchases their game. They want to get their money's worth. And so that's a totally fair point. I think there's a way to do it so that it's there's like optional stuff that makes it more worth the money, while still constraining the main story to a tighter time frame, I think would still work.
Yeah.
And I definitely think 8 hours would have been a sweet spot for this. There are sections when I'm just like, holy shit, like, all right. Like, you could probably cut it at about now, you know?
The pacing was a bit off for me.
Yeah.
Like, I got disinterested a few times, just because, like, I think the grass, the garden level that I was talking about earlier, I feel like this is a little too long.
Right.
Like, the toad and the spider sections weren't really needed.
Yeah, they sure weren't.
Yeah.
They sure weren't. I have a phobia of toads.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
I think they're frogs, technically, but yes.
Well, whatever. That's the same. As far as I'm concerned, I'm still just as terrified. Yeah. And so, like, what I suggested is not necessarily cutting levels, but cutting little bits and pieces of each level to trim down that time, and I think would have been okay. And then, yeah, I think you brought up here the simple ending. I want to be clear. I also think the ending was simple, and I do kind of wish a little bit more was expanded upon there. But I think my biggest surprise and like relief is that they just didn't go with that easy they got back together ending, and that's what I'm so pleased
about.
What
that would have been the worst, if like there was like a after credit scene where we see like a bump on that would have been like the most cheesiest kind of way to wrap it ever. So I think you're right. I think the simple ending is the better option here, but I do feel, because of how long the game felt, like I wish there was a better reward somehow for all that work.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think this ending is perfect, by the way. I was just glad they didn't get back together, but or at least not romantically. But yeah, I do. I'm with you because yeah, you go on this long journey, and then the game is summed up in the last like literally 5 minutes,
yeah.
Maybe even less than that, yeah. Like 2-3 minutes, something like that. And for how long the game is, yeah, I'm with you that I would have liked to have seen a little bit more at the end there.
Here's
yeah.
what I would have liked to see. I would have liked to see the parents interact with Rose more because
right.
of the issues I have with the game of them not really caring about Rose and her right. feelings. So I would have seen, I would have loved to see her hang out with her parents and like the parents not being particularly romantically together, but like agreeing to look after the child, you know, like that would have been right. nice to see.
Right. Yeah. I think they purposely left it a little bit ambiguous because yeah. it's not exactly clear whether or not they get back together. They just sort of definitively say that yes, we're going to be good parents, and then they kind of just like walk off into the sunset. And yeah. so like I guess there's a reality or an alternate reality where they do get back together. There's a reality where they
that would have felt
stay co-parents. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I'm just glad that it wasn't like a nice bow that wrapped it up. Okay, we're back together. Yay, happy ending.
You know what would have been a cool ending if like Dr. Hakim was like the final boss and the two just didn't want to get back together at all.
Yeah, I think that would have been ballsy. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think how they wrapped it up, like the toy sections of them being dolls, you know, I think that was really right. well done because like she right. was so scared of singing, and I could feel that in the haptic feedback of the PS5 controller DualSense. Like yeah. I could feel the heartbeats, and as she was walking up to the stage, her heartbeat raised more and more, and like things like that are so yeah. cool, and like that those extra details are so clear in It Takes Two. Like yeah
And what's wild is I didn't get to experience that. No. You were just there's a section where the end of the game is May is gonna sing, and that's her passion. She's just afraid to do it. And so Chris said as we were playing, yeah, that the heartbeat, you could feel it in the controller, and I'm like, I totally didn't even get to experience that. Now I want to play it again.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much where we want to leave it here. But I do want to say that this is one of my favorite games. Like of all time, honestly.
Wow.
Just because of all the special things and like these criticisms we have with like the characters aren't particularly likable and all this. I think that those criticisms we have are like already like deeper than most games get anyway. So for that, I think this game still deserves credit mm-hmm. for getting us to think beyond just I jumped on the enemy's head, you know, whatever. So. Definitely, it's my game of the year so far. I know we're only in April. Resident Evil comes out
at the end of the year.
Next month. Yeah. But yeah, definitely. And the one thing I want to say as well is I don't think this game is going to sell particularly well, which is a shame.
I hope you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong, too. It's not your blockbuster, or at least it's not presented that way as this blockbuster game. And so I feel like a lot of people are probably going to skip this. And it is kind of a barrier, right, that you have to play it cooperatively. I think that's automatically, like, hard to get through for some people, right?
But I would say that there has been a rise of co-op games over the last few years, especially with the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But anyway, I definitely recommend this game. I think it's great for kids, it's great for
it's T for teen actually, so I don't think it's good for kids because there's a few swear words here and there, and that elephant scene was horrific and will be in my mind forever.
I'll say this, it's good for mature kids.
Yeah, I think so.
And definitely great for adults, and I just think this is such a smart topic that games don't explore really. So yeah, one of my favorite games ever, definitely one of my favorite games of the year. Chris, anything else you wanted to say before we wrap up?
I don't think we've given the script enough credit. It's very funny, like we were laughing all the way through. So there's a lot of great moments with the script as well.
And what's great is that we were laughing, and then the elephant scene happens, or a scene like a heartfelt moment with the daughter. Like There are lots of emotions. And then, like, that section where you're fighting the squirrel, I was screaming because I was like, that's so fucking cool. So, like, there are all these emotions that happen while you're playing, mm-hmm. from sadness to happiness to excitement to, like, you know, suspense almost. Like, yeah, it'll pull at your heartstrings, I guess.
Yeah.
The saying,
and so many surprises in this game that just, like, made me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, let's end it there because we don't want to go too terribly long here. Chris, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And that
you're a busy boy as well.
Yeah, I have a lot to do. Yeah. Everybody go play It Takes Two. And Chris, where can people find you when you're not on the show?
Yeah, you can find me at Penwell Writes on Twitter. You can check out my stuff on The Gamer and Retroware and Tech Raptor. I will have a write-up on It Takes Two on Retroware, as it's technically an indie game. And yeah, you can read my stuff there. Go check out Go Beyond, My Hero Academia podcast, each and every Wednesday. Vaughn Hyde and I, we go through the nitty-gritty details of each and every episode. We compare the anime to the manga and get very, very nerdy. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've been doing it for a year now this week. Which
Holy
is nuts,
shit.
And hope to continue it further.
Cool. You can find my work, you can find me on Twitter at Joseph Yaden. You can find my work at Digital Trends. I actually did a review for It Takes Two over at Your Money Geek that you can check out. Mm-hmm. And I just did a pretty interesting report about the PS Vita games that you guys can read over at Games Radar. And I've got a bunch of other stuff in the works as well. So, we want to thank everybody for their time. Please, please go check out this game. Please, please, please. Seriously. It's like, if this were Call of Duty or something, no knock against Call of Duty, I wouldn't be begging you to try it because Call of Duty is going to sell well. This game, I don't think is going to sell very well. And so I'm really wanting people to play it because I think it's so good and so special. Yeah. So thank you for your time and we will catch you on the next episode. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We hope this fixes your relationship. Also, we got a review code from EA. Thank you so much.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm glad you said that. All right, bye.